Hey, welcome to the Growth.me summary of Getting to Yes from Roger Fisher, William Urey, and Bruce Patton. Getting to Yes is the most important book on negotiation. According to many professionals, it comes from the leaders of the Harvard Negotiation Project, who wanted to help people negotiate agreements with less time and friction. The four steps of the method are people, interests, options, and criteria. Looking at the online reviews, on Amazon it has 4.6 stars, and on Goodreads it has 3.9 stars. Many positive reviewers said it is the book to read on negotiation, one that inspired many, many others after it, and it's required reading for many students in business or law school. But there were some critical reviewers who said the writing can sometimes be dry and technical, in other words, kind of boring. Now, our top quote from this book is, "If you want someone to listen and understand your reasoning, give your interests and reasoning first, and your conclusions or proposals later." End quote. Negotiation is the best. It's a core skill we need to be an effective salesperson, manager, or leader, and it can even help nations avoid going to war. The problem is that most of us don't know how to negotiate. Or if we do negotiate, then we do it badly. I mean, some people may avoid negotiating altogether because old-fashioned bargaining can sound awkward and confrontational. Well, this book, Getting to Yes, wants to change all of that. The experts at the Harvard Negotiation Project created a new method called principled negotiation that allows us to work with the other sides to find the best agreement or solution for everyone, rather than fighting against them as an enemy. They wrote down their method in this book, which became a bestseller and, as mentioned before, is often required reading for business and law school students. Now, the four steps of getting to yes are people, interests, options, and criteria. That means, number one, working side by side with the other people to attack the problem together. Number two, discovering the real underlying needs and interests of everyone involved. Number three, brainstorming creative alternatives or options that meet everyone's needs better. And number four, finding fair, objective, outside standards or criteria to help us agree on the final decisions. Sounds interesting, right? In this book summary, we'll run through some of the most useful lessons and tips found in the book super quick. But let's take a look at the authors first. Roger Fisher, William Urey, and Bruce Patton were three top experts on negotiation at Harvard University. Beyond their writing and teaching, they've also consulted with large companies and governments to help resolve business conflicts, to reach peace agreements, like in the Middle East, and to prevent international nuclear war. Yeah, I know, that escalated quickly. So here is lesson one. See the people. Principled negotiation is about working side by side to fulfill everyone's interests. I think the classic Hollywood scene of negotiation is like a tense standoff. You can imagine two characters in business suits sitting across from each other at a desk, staring at each other without smiling or blinking. And maybe if the writers of the show are having fun, they'll add some shouting and swearing. It's not a pretty picture, I can tell you. Well, even in real life, negotiations can be less than pleasant. Often we fall into a tug of war over the price or other factors. For example, imagine this. Mike is trying to buy a used car, and he says, "I'll give you $2,000 in cash." And the owner of the car, Bob, says, "No way, it's worth at least $5,000. Then Mike says, "That's impossible. The best I can do is $3,000. And Bob replies, "How about we split the difference at $4,000? And then Mike sighs and he pulls out his wallet and says, "Ah, fine, but you're really giving me a hard time here, Bob." Well, that's very common, and the authors of Getting to Yes call that positional bargaining. It's based on choosing a starting position, often without much reason, and then trying to give up less of our position than the other side. And whoever gives up less wins. But I put wins in quotation marks because nobody really wins, because this way of negotiating is slow, inefficient, and sometimes even destructive to the long-term relationship, which is so important in business. Of course, both sides have an incentive to start with an extreme position, and then with each compromise from that position, they feel like they're losing. Our pride tends to become involved with that kind of negotiation, and we can easily feel disrespected by attacks on our position, as if our needs are being ignored. Now, there's a self-help book that everyone has heard about called How to Win Friends and Influence People. And I think the most important point in that book is that everyone deeply desires a feeling of importance. And so to become a great leader and to get along with others, it says we must take care not to damage people's feeling of importance through direct confrontation, overly harsh criticism, expressions of contempt, etc. Here's one of my favorite quotes from that book. "When dealing with people, let us remember we're not dealing with creatures of logic, we're dealing with creatures of emotion, creatures bristling with prejudices and motivated by pride and vanity." End quote. Well, I think that's incredibly important to keep in mind when we're communicating with anyone, and especially negotiating. You can learn more about that in our summary of How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie on growth.me. But what is the solution? What's the right way to negotiate? Well, that will be our next lesson. But to summarize the first one, principled negotiation starts with a commitment to solve everyone's problems in the agreement, rather than feeling like we're working against them. And that requires moving past the idea of negotiating between two opposing positions. So we have to move past positions. Now, lesson two is listen for needs. Underneath people's words and their position, you find their real interests. So this next part of getting to yes is about finding out, what does everyone really need? What are the true interests that can be solved in this negotiation? And probably most of all, how does the other side really see the situation and feel about it? So how do we find out all of that? By listening. Listen, listen, listen. The authors recommend asking questions like why and why not, like when they tell you their position or if they reject your position, then you can ask why or why not, and make sure you're doing this in a tone of voice that's curious, not accusatory. So our goal here is to discover their motivations, feelings, and needs, and that can usually reveal new factors that will dramatically change the shape of the negotiation. We'll see a lot more about that later. Now, there's another top expert on negotiation named Chris Voss, who worked at the FBI for 24 years and became their top hostage negotiator. As you can guess, during those decades, he mastered many highly effective negotiating techniques. After all, he was dealing with criminals, kidnappers, and terrorists. But in his recent best-selling book, Chris Voss also emphasized the incredible power of listening. He wrote, "It all starts with the universally applicable premise that people want to be understood and accepted. Listening is the cheapest yet most effective concession we make to get there." End quote. In any negotiation, Chris always tries to summarize the other side's position back to them in his own words, and that demonstrates he's listening and understanding their situation. And you can learn more in our summary of Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, which is another great book on negotiation. But back to this book. In particular, the authors say we want to listen for, number one, basic human needs, like for safety, autonomy, recognition, etc. When we can identify the real needs that are beneath or underneath a position, then it becomes possible to meet that need in some other way in the final agreement. So here's an example that I thought of. Imagine someone wanted to work from home, but their boss said no. And the employee asked some questions and found out their boss was actually worried about their work performance dropping if they went to home. So the employee could make a new offer in the negotiation. They could offer to set some clear goals for their work productivity or performance, and that could put their boss at ease and allow them to work at home. Okay, a second thing you want to listen for are common interests. Can you find any other common goals that you and the other side have, even outside of the current deal? Those may show opportunities to work together and to include something new in the agreement. Here's an example from another book. When the CEO of Disney bought Pixar in 2006, a big reason the deal was signed was that Disney was committed to preserving the unique culture at Pixar's headquarters. You see, Pixar really loved their culture and they didn't want to change. But Disney also didn't want them to change because they're making so many great movies. So it was a win-win to include that inside the agreement. Now you can imagine if there was some other company that wanted to buy Pixar and change their culture, then Pixar would not have accepted that nearly as easily. Okay, a third thing to listen for are opposite interests. Can you look for differences that are actually complementary? In other words, is there anything you value highly that the other side does not? Or maybe you can find something to offer that would cost you little to include in the agreement, but it would provide a lot of value or benefit to them? Here's another example I thought of to illustrate this. Let's say a car dealership could not lower the price of a car any lower, but they discover that the buyer also needs winter tires. And so they offer to include those tires at their discounted wholesale price. And as a result, the buyer saves money in a different way, while the dealership sells the car at the price they need to. You know, if they include the tires at their cost to buy them, then they don't really lose money, but they also get to sell the car. Okay, a fourth thing to listen for are their obstacles. Can you find any problems that make the deal difficult for them to execute? Simply making the execution more easy and convenient for them can make all the difference in many negotiations. For example, I recently finished reading the biography of Steve Jobs, who was a master negotiator and very intelligent at this. When Jobs was launching the iTunes Music Store, he needed to sign deals with all of the major music companies, which was a minor miracle. But Jobs accomplished it by making the deals very easy for the music labels. He said that Apple would take care of everything: the music player, the software, the online downloads, the copyright protection, the payment processing, etc. All they had to do was sign the deal. So to summarize the second lesson, listen with care to find the real interests and needs of the people involved. Those are the driving force beneath their stated positions. You should be listening for their basic needs, like for safety, listen for hidden obstacles to the execution, and especially listen for shared interests and differing interests that may reveal surprising new opportunities for cooperation. Lesson 3 is expand the pie. Brainstorming alternative agreements that meet everyone's needs better. When we begin a negotiation, it's easy for us to get stuck in a kind of tunnel vision. I mean that both sides start with their conflicting positions, and we assume the solution must be found in a straight line somewhere between those two positions. So then we may argue about who will get a bigger slice of the pie. But there's no reason to believe that. The best agreements are more about expanding the pie, so everyone gets a bigger slice at the same time. And yes, this is possible because we don't need to be compromising between positions. Instead, we can invent creative new agreements outside of those positions that meet everyone's needs better. And it starts with brainstorming. Brainstorming is the best way to begin creating those better agreements, and because it means proposing many, many new ideas to meet everyone's interests without holding anything back in the beginning. During this brainstorming stage or exercise, a rule of no criticism is highly recommended by the authors of Getting to Yes. So brainstorming means getting a ton of ideas on paper without judging them at first. It's only later on, when we're finished brainstorming, that we'll move on to a second stage of eliminating the ideas that aren't good and then refining the good ideas into something realistic that we can actually do. I know that many professional writers follow a similar process. Their first stage in writing is like a free-flowing rough draft, and they don't stop to edit. And it's only after they're completely done that first draft that they move on to the second stage, which is careful editing. Or, as one writer said, write drunk, edit sober. But I don't think anyone will recommend going to your next negotiation drunk. Now, one of the most important social psychologists ever is named Daniel Kahneman, who won the so-called Nobel Prize in Economics. In his brilliant book, Thinking Fast and Slow, Kahneman separated people's decision-making into two categories. He said we have one system in our minds for making decisions that are quick and intuitive, and a second system for making decisions in a more slow and logical way. And I think it's fascinating that studies suggest using that intuitive part of our mind requires feeling at ease. As Kahneman wrote, quote, "Mood evidently affects the operation of system one. When we are uncomfortable and unhappy, we lose touch with our intuition," end quote. Well, that may explain why it's so important to avoid criticism in the first stage of creativity, whether we're negotiating, writing, or anything else. You can learn more about those ideas in our summary of the book Thinking Fast and Slow on growth.me. But to summarize lesson 3, instead of fighting over a limited pie of two opposing positions, we can actually expand the pie so everyone gets more. First, host a brainstorming session where you invent many creative new ideas for ways to meet everyone's needs better without any criticism or judgment, and later on refine the best ideas into something more realistic. Lesson 4 is find fair standards. Resolving disputes by pointing to objective measures and pre-existing examples. So the fourth and final step of the official method is about criteria. This means resolving disagreements in the negotiation with some outside fair standard. It's another way or technique to avoid that tug-of-war game of positional bargaining. So we're trying to avoid creating an agreement based on who can push for their position more strongly, but we're making an agreement based on some objective measurement, and often one that is generally accepted by most people. Now, to be specific, an objective standard can mean pre-existing agreements. So how have similar situations or negotiations been resolved before? If you can point towards some precedents, that can be very compelling to the other side. And this can also be related to accepted traditions, customs, and norms in your community or country. Another standard can be market data. There's a lot of information available publicly to resolve disagreements. Like if there's some disagreement about the fair price of a home, for example, both people can look towards how much similar homes are sold for nearby. And another standard is expert judgment. So if there continues to be any disagreement, even about which standard is the most fair, then the best solution may be to decide using a third-party expert. Someone that both sides agree will make an impartial decision. So I found this part of getting to yes very interesting because in some ways it is an irrational way to resolve disagreements. I mean that just because people have done something a certain way in the past, that doesn't mean it's the right way to do it now. And yet we cannot deny that past precedents are a powerful road when it comes to changing people's minds or influencing them about what's the right thing to do. The psychologist Robert Cialdini talks about the principle of social proof. In his words, quote, "Social proof states that one means we use to determine what is correct is to find out what other people think is correct," end quote. In other words, we often look towards others to find out what is right to do or what is true, especially in situations when we feel unsure of ourselves. And perhaps that's why the beliefs that most of us have do appear to be a reflection of where we are born or who our family or parents were. And this applies to everything. What we believe about how to live properly or what government type is best or maybe what religion is true, etc. Learn more about that in our summary of the book Influence by Robert Cialdini. To summarize this lesson, to resolve disagreements fairly, don't compromise between positions, but point towards some outside standard. That can include past examples of how similar negotiations were completed, or maybe some accepted traditions or norms. It could also mean looking at objective market data, or maybe deferring to an impartial expert's judgment. And finally, we have lesson 5, gain leverage with options. Finding better alternative deals gives you confidence to walk away. So let's finish this up with a cool little technique called BATNA, which is short for Best Alternative to Negotiated Agreement. That's abbreviated BATNA. In other words, you need to know what your best alternatives are if this deal doesn't work out. For example, if you're going to buy a car, you should already have done some good research on prices for similar cars nearby. There's real power that comes from having options and at least knowing what your next best option is. Because when you're faced with a deal that doesn't look great, you'll know whether you should take it if your alternatives are bad, or if you should not take it if your alternatives are pretty good. In the end, you'll always be better off when you know your alternative options compared to going in blind to your other options. According to the authors, if your BATNA is great, then it can make sense to share it with the other side during the negotiation. Like if you're at a job interview and you wanted a higher starting salary, then you could get a lot of leverage if you let the company know that you already have other job offers that you're considering. Now, Donald Trump, before he became a fiery politician and the U.S. president, was, of course, a famous businessman. He negotiated some incredibly complex deals, particularly in real estate, like building skyscrapers in New York and a casino in Atlantic City. Well, in Trump's book, The Art of the Deal, it shows he understood how to use leverage very effectively. And he understood this idea of BATNA, at least intuitively. For example, one time he was negotiating to buy some waterfront land in New York. And first he began with talking about the advantages to the buyer of selling the land to him, to Trump. Like he talked about his business experience and that he could get the deal approved by the authorities quickly. But next, Trump took a step back and talked about the seller's lack of alternative options, like that New York was in a recession, and that included real estate, people were not buying. Basically, Trump was painting a picture of the buyer's other alternatives being much worse than selling to him. Here's a quote from him: "If you want to buy something, it's obviously in your best interest to convince the seller that what he's got isn't worth very much," end quote. You can learn more in our summary of The Art of the Deal by Donald Trump on growth.me. To summarize this lesson, determine your BATNA, or best alternative agreement. That gives you confidence to walk away from a bad deal, or it lets you know if you should accept a poor deal when your alternatives will be even worse. But if your alternatives are great, you can let them know, and that can give you a lot of leverage and power in the negotiation. Okay, so let's finish up with three quick practical action steps how we could apply this to our lives and future negotiations. Number one, write down one list with everyone's interests. So instead of getting distracted by what everyone says their positions are, write down what all their interests are on one page. For example, in the book, there's a husband and wife who want to build a house, and they can't agree on a lot of stuff. So the architect asks them, what do they really want? And, you know, one person says they want a lot of sunlight, and another person says they want a garage they can work on their car in. So the architect writes all these separate interests down on one page, goes away, and then creates a plan for the house based on all those interests. And then that satisfies all their interests without needing to negotiate between two opposing positions. And doing this kind of one big list or one text procedure, as the authors call it, can provide a fresh new perspective to help us invent a creative new agreement. A second action step is to ask, how did you come up with that position? In other words, you're asking them to share their reasoning or their theory underneath their position, like the price they're asking for. Now, this is much better than directly telling their position is wrong. Instead, you ask how they came up with that position, and then maybe you can point towards a more fair standard. Okay, a third action step is research your alternative options for 1 to 10 hours. Obviously, the more important the deal is, the more time you'll want to spend here. Now, research sounds kind of boring, you know, but more than anything else, I think this helps us enter a negotiation with confidence, because it can give us leverage in the conversation. We know our alternatives. It gives us information about the current market, and we can even gather ideas for a creative agreement, how other people have structured these kinds of deals before. Okay, so I'll see you in the next book summary.